This is Barbara Foster reading about diabetes, hitting refresh by Allison Massey. The winter months were challenging for many people, with the COVID-19 virus continuing to impact communities around the world. In the midst of this dire season, the 2020 to 2025 dietary guidelines for Americans were released, and the timing really couldn't have been better. Collectively, we all may need a little refreshing of our eating habits, and the guidelines provide some science-based suggestions for how we can make the most of our next meal or snack. This column explores how the new guidelines impact the three S's, sugar, sodium, and sustenance, and provide some tips on making the most of the summer harvest. Add sustenance. Instead of focusing on what you need to remove from your meal plan, focus on what you need to do more of, such as drinking more water or eating more specific nutrient-rich foods. American adults generally tend to have a low intake of a few particular nutrients. Here are two areas to consider working on if you would like to start making dietary changes. Fiber. More than 90% of Americans don't meet recommended levels of fiber consumption. The suggested intake of this nutrient varies slightly by age. According to the 2020 to 2025 dietary guidelines, it is recommended that adults 19 to 50 years old consume 25 to 34 grams daily, varying by sex, and adults 51 and older consume 22 to 28 grams each day, varying by sex. The easiest way to increase fiber intake is to focus on adding more whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, fruits, and vegetables to each meal. Calcium and vitamin D. Often overlooked, calcium and vitamin D are particularly important for people 19 to 30 years old who are at a time in life when they need to meet nutritional needs for accruing bone mass. Even if you are beyond the age for bone mass accrual, maintaining adequate calcium and vitamin D intake is still important. Potential calcium sources in the diet go beyond just dairy products like milk and yogurt, and also include fortified soy-based alternatives, canned sardines and salmon, as well as some fortified grain products such as cereals. Vitamin D requirements can be difficult to meet through food alone, and including a dietary supplement can potentially be beneficial. Discuss vitamin D supplementation with your healthcare provider. Reduce added sugars. The average American consumes 266 calories daily in added sugar. Recommendations to reduce sugar come in part from the need to avoid items with empty calories and to instead focus on eating mostly healthful foods that provide our bodies with important nutrients. The dietary guidelines suggest that added sugars should contribute less than 10% of calories per day. How can you stay within these guidelines without making each meal a nutrient-based math equation? Here are a few practical tips. Reflect. Think about what you are eating in an average day and consider how often you add sugars to food or beverages and how often you eat foods that are high in added sugars. Reduce. Once you've identified potential sources of added sugar, reducing consumption might include steps like limiting portions of sugar or honey that you add to beverages or food, or reducing how often you eat specific types of foods. Substitute. Focus on substituting some of the higher added sugar items in your diet with alternatives that are just as enjoyable but lower in sugar. To give a few examples, instead of sugar-sweetened beverages, try seltzer waters, unsweetened tea, unflavored coconut water, or water with fruit slices. In place of high-sugar breakfast cereals, try muesli, oatmeal, or eggs with grits. Rather than breakfast bars, try one slice of whole-grain toast with cream cheese and fresh fruit. Top sources of added sugars: 24% is sugar-sweetened beverages, 19% are desserts and sweet snacks, 19% are other sources, 11% coffee and tea, 9% candy and sugars, 7% breakfast cereal and bars, 7% sandwiches, and 4% high-fat milk and yogurt. Lower sodium intake. Reducing sodium intake contributes to improved cardiovascular health. Most Americans consume much more than the recommended sodium levels, instead averaging from about 2,000 milligrams to 5,000 milligrams daily. Salt added during home food preparation and during commercial processing of foods accounts for the majority of sodium consumed. Here are a few simple strategies that can help you easily reduce the sodium in your diet. Focus on fats. Reading the nutrition facts label of products you purchase frequently will provide more insight into what simple changes you can make while grocery shopping. Find reduced sodium alternatives for foods that you eat daily. Shake less. Salt does enhance flavors when cooking, but use it sparingly, or let each family member individually season their food as needed. Reducing the amount of salt added during the cooking or baking process helps with lowering overall intake. Explore other flavors. Use herbs and spices and low-sodium condiments to enhance the flavors of your dishes without adding salt. Eat out less often. Cooking at home is the best way to monitor the sodium in your diet because you can choose which foods to buy and know how the food has been prepared. Top three sources of sodium in the American diet: sandwiches, rice, pasta, and other grain-based dishes, vegetables, canned or in high sodium sauces, excluding starchy vegetables like potatoes, peas, beans, and corn. Recommended sodium intake levels, according to the 2020 to 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, Healthy Eating Patterns limit sodium to the chronic disease risk reduction, CDRR, levels defined by the national academies: 1,200 milligrams daily for ages 1 to 3 years, 1,500 milligrams daily for ages 4 to 8 years, 1,800 milligrams daily for ages 9 to 13 years, and 2,300 milligrams daily for all other ages. Do you have any tips on how to make the most of the summer harvest? We all get into food ruts where we just don't find planning meals all that exciting, and we instead gravitate toward what might be convenient and easy. Personally, I find this happens particularly in the winter months when I don't have as much variety in local produce available. Refocusing on eating seasonally can reinvigorate creativity in the kitchen. Here are my top tips for making the most of the summer harvest in your area. Start a garden. Consider starting a small garden to grow greens, herbs, or other vegetables you enjoy. Don't let the lack of space or a backyard deter you. Many things can be grown in a small container garden with the proper light and care. Support local farmers markets. Visit a farmers market in your area for a selection of fresh produce, or join a community-supported agriculture CSA program to receive fresh produce from local farms. Let in-season produce shine. Create a simple meal or snack with the focus on one seasonal ingredient. There's no need for elaborate preparation or lengthy recipes when the ingredients are used at the peak of perfection. Tried and True Weight Loss Strategies: 7 Steps You Can Try Today by Dr. Nicola Davies. The importance of diet for diabetes self-management isn't just about better glucose management. The right eating plan will also help you maintain a healthy weight, which in turn can help prevent the development of diabetes-associated complications. But what if you need to lose weight first before you can think about maintaining a healthy weight? Here are some tried and tested methods to help you. Number 1. Reduce calories by focusing on nutrient quality. With so many fad diets, it is easy to get caught up in the hype. However, research has found that fad diets rarely work in the long term. Focusing on the quality of nutrients in your meals and total calories consumed is a more effective approach for long-term weight loss. In fact, choosing nutrient-rich, high-quality foods is an easy way to consume fewer calories. Low-quality foods, such as processed items, are high in calories and low in nutrient content. In contrast, high-quality foods such as vegetables, whole grains, and fruits are rich in nutrients and contain fewer calories than processed foods. This means you don't have to eat less to reduce your calories, you just need to eat differently. Rather than embarking on a fad diet or restricting your food consumption, make simple changes to the types of foods you eat. Don't drink your calories. Depending on the flavor, a 16-ounce Grand Starbucks Frappuccino averages 300-plus calories, while a glass of wine can contain 100 calories or more. It's easy to overlook the calories you consume through beverages like these, but if you are making healthy food choices and still drinking a lot of sugary drinks, it will sabotage your weight loss goals. Fortunately, since liquid calories don't contribute to feelings of satiety, reducing them will not cause feelings of deprivation or hunger. You can reduce your liquid calories by substituting sugary beverages with water and healthier alternatives. You could even add some fresh lemon or raspberries to your water to add some flavor to it. Number 2, control your portions. Portion control is an effective way to lose weight and keep it off. Research has found that we tend to eat more food when it is served in larger portions. So one simple way to manage your portions is to use a smaller plate. It is also important to have a general idea of suitable portion sizes to avoid overeating. For instance, 3 ounces of poultry, fish, or meat should be roughly the size of the palm of your hand, while 1 medium-sized fruit should be the size of your fist. If you eat out often, it is important always to check that your portions are not too big. Portion sizes at restaurants are often large, and you may be unaware that you are overeating. Asking for half portions or sharing your dessert are simple ways you can avoid overeating when dining out. The diabetes plate method. The diabetes plate method can help you create a healthy balance of carbohydrates, vegetables, and proteins. All you need is a medium-sized dinner plate, approximately 9 inches in diameter. Step 1. Fill half your plate with vegetables that are low in starch, such as broccoli, Brussels sprouts, celery, carrots, mushrooms, leafy greens, asparagus, lettuce, spinach, eggplant, cucumber, or squash. These vegetables are high in nutrients and won't elevate your blood sugar levels, so they are a healthy way to get essential nutrients and fill up on fiber. Number 2, fill a quarter of your plate with lean protein, such as fish, chicken, shellfish, for example, shrimp, scallops, or clams, lean beef, or lean pork. You can also get lean protein from plant sources such as tofu and tempeh, beans, lentils, nuts, and nut butters, hummus, or falafel. Incorporating lean proteins into your diet reduces your intake of saturated fats and provides a healthy way to get your protein. Step 3. Fill a quarter of your plate with carbohydrates. Since carbs have the highest impact on your blood sugar, monitoring your intake of carbs is essential. You can opt for grains or other starches such as potatoes, rice, or pasta. However, it is recommended you avoid refined carbohydrates and go for whole grain options where possible. In this step, you can also choose to substitute carbohydrates with more vegetables. Step 3. Fill up on fiber. One of the main reasons weight loss attempts fail is hunger. When you constantly feel hungry, you are more likely to binge, eat, or snack on unhealthy foods. The best way to beat hunger pangs is to include lots of fiber in your diet. Indeed, studies have found that eating 30 grams of fiber each day can help with weight loss, lower your blood pressure, and increase insulin sensitivity. Fiber-rich foods are low in calories but have a filling effect that keeps you satiated for longer. Soluble fiber also slows down the rate at which sugars and fats enter your bloodstream, giving you a steady supply of energy. Some examples of fiber-rich foods include whole grain breakfast cereals, whole grain oats and bread, fruits such as oranges, pears, and berries, vegetables such as broccoli, carrots, and sweet corn, and peas, beans, and pulses. Number 4, stay active. Physical activity and exercise are an integral part of weight loss. The American Diabetes Association recommends at least 30 minutes of exercise 3 to 5 days a week. Exercise not only boosts weight loss by helping you burn calories, but it also helps regulate blood sugar levels. Finding ways to stay active is especially important if you have both diabetes and a sedentary lifestyle. It is recommended that you break up sedentary periods every 30 minutes with some form of physical activity. taking regular brisk walks, doing aerobics, and even weight training are all beneficial for weight loss and regulating blood sugar. Fitness is not restricted to sweating it out at the gym. Simple lifestyle changes like walking after dinner or parking a block or two away from your office can help you add more physical activity into your life. Number 5, don't skip meals. Skipping meals will make your blood sugar levels fluctuate and is likely to prevent weight loss. You might have an initial weight loss, but your metabolism will start to slow down, which will make long-term weight loss and maintenance difficult. Having regular, balanced meals keeps your blood sugar level steady and also makes you less likely to overeat. Number 6, get enough sleep. Poor sleep can interfere with hormones such as ghrelin and leptin. Ghrelin is a hormone that sends signals to your brain that cause you to be hungry. When you're sleep deprived, your body produces higher levels of ghrelin, increasing your appetite. Studies have also found that high ghrelin levels are linked to increased food cravings and emotional eating. On the other hand, leptin, a hormone that signals fullness, is produced in lower quantities when you are sleep deprived. The net effect of this is that the less you sleep you get, the higher your appetite and the more you are likely to eat. To avoid hormonal imbalances, you should get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep daily. Number 7, find ways to de-stress. Stress eating is a common cause of weight gain. The effect of stress on hormones such as cortisol has been found to contribute to weight gain. Cortisol is a glucocorticoid that stimulates appetite and increases cravings. In other words, you are more likely to engage in emotional eating when you are stressed out or anxious. Physical activity, mindfulness, meditation, or therapy are some ways in which you can de-stress. It is also important to have a support system to help you cope with your diabetes and encourage you with your weight loss efforts. Choosing what works. In overweight people with type 2 diabetes, even marginal weight loss of about 5% has been found to improve blood glucose control. This means you can significantly improve your quality of life by achieving a healthy weight. While weight loss is far from easy, it will be easier if you avoid fad diets and stick to tried and tested weight loss techniques. Fortunately, these techniques are much more achievable over the long term, and that is why they work. Short-term low-carbohydrate diet linked to remission of type 2 diabetes, but further trials are needed to determine longer-term effects, say researchers. By Dr. Ari Levine et al. Patients with type 2 diabetes who follow a strict low-carbohydrate diet for 6 months may experience greater rates of remission compared with other recommended diets without adverse effects, suggests a study published by the BMG Today. The researchers acknowledge that most benefits diminished at 12 months, but say doctors might consider short-term strict low-carbohydrate diets for managing type 2 diabetes while actively monitoring and adjusting diabetes medication as needed. Type 2 diabetes is the most common form of diabetes worldwide, and diet is recognized as an essential part of treatment. But uncertainty remains about which diet to choose, and previous studies have reported mixed results. To address this evidence gap, a team of international researchers set out to assess the effectiveness and safety of low-carbohydrate diets, LCDs, and very low-carbohydrate diets, VLCDs, for people with type 2 diabetes compared with mostly low-fat control diets. Their findings are based on analysis of published and unpublished data from 23 randomized trials involving 1,357 participants. LCDs were defined as less than 26% daily calories from carbohydrates, and VLCDs were defined as less than 10% daily calories from carbohydrates for at least 12 weeks in adults, averaging age 47 to 67 years with type 2 diabetes. Outcomes were reported at 6 and 12 months and included remission of diabetes, reduced blood sugar levels with or without the use of diabetes medication, weight loss, adverse events, and health-related quality of life. Although the trials were designed differently and were of varying quality, the researchers were able to allow for this in their analysis. based on low to moderate certainty evidence. The researchers found that patients on LCDs achieved higher diabetes remission rates at 6 months compared with patients on controlled diets without adverse events. For example, based on moderate certainty evidence from 8 trials with 264 participants, those following a LCD experienced on average a 32% absolute risk reduction, 28 fewer cases per 100 followed in diabetes remission at 6 months. LCDs also increased weight loss, reduced medication use, and improved body fat triglyceride concentrations at 6 months. However, most of these benefits diminished at 12 months, a finding consistent with previous reviews, and some evidence showed worsening of quality of life and cholesterol levels at 12 months. This study used robust methods to increase the precision and overall certainty of the effect estimates. But the authors acknowledged some limitations, such as the ongoing debate around what constitutes remission of diabetes and uncertainty over the longer-term effectiveness and safety of LCDs. They also stressed that their results are based on moderate to low certainty evidence. As such, they suggest clinicians might consider short-term LCDs for management of type 2 diabetes while actively monitoring and adjusting diabetes medication as needed. Future long-term, well-designed, calorie-controlled, randomized trials are needed to determine the effects of LCD on sustained weight loss and remission of diabetes, as well as cardiovascular mortality and major morbidity, they conclude. Diabetes Hand Disorders, Pointing Out the Problems by Amy Campbell, MSRDLDNCDCES. You may have heard that diabetes can affect just about every organ system in the body. It can also affect a part of the body that you normally don't think about and maybe take a little bit for granted, your hands. We rely on our hands to do so many things, holding and carrying items, writing, typing and texting, playing games, driving a car, holding hands, and patting our pets are just some of the daily tasks that require functioning hands. Our hands contain 27 bones. The wrist alone has 8 bones. In addition, our hands are made up of muscles, tendons, ligaments, nerves, and joint capsules. The hands can have numerous problems, including sprains, fractures, tendonitis, arthritis, and dislocation. If you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, you may also be at risk of developing other disorders, often grouped under the term diabetic hand syndrome. Let's take a look at what comprises this syndrome. Diabetic stiff hand syndrome. Diabetic stiff hand syndrome, or DSHS, is also known as diabetic chiroarthropathy. As the name implies, finger movement becomes limited due to increasing stiffness of the hands. Hand stiffness can make even the simplest tasks more and more difficult. DSHS is one of the most common hand disorders in people with diabetes. It tends to occur first in the pinky finger and over time spreads to the thumb. Risk factors. DSHS is more likely in people who have had diabetes for a long time. Why does this happen? It's possible that constant high blood sugars cause glycosylation, the process by which glucose molecules attach to protein, in this case collagen, causing stiffness. Besides glycosylation, diabetic neuropathy, nerve damage, and diabetic microangiopathy, a blood vessel disorder, can also contribute to DSHS. Symptoms. If you have DSHS, you may be unable to straighten your fingers fully. If you hold the palms of your hands together and all parts of your hands don't touch, this could be DSHS. Another symptom of this condition is waxy-looking skin that is tight and thick on the backs of your hands. Treatments. There isn't a way to reverse DSHS, but treatment involves both physical and occupational therapy. Keeping your hands strong with hand exercises is also important. And tight blood glucose control can both prevent and slow the development of DSHS. Dupuytren's contracture. Dupuytren's contracture, sometimes called Dupuytren's disease, is a condition where the connective tissue in the palm of the hand thickens and knots. Knots of tissue can form under the skin and eventually create a thick cord that pulls one or more fingers into a bent position, according to the Mayo Clinic. Dupuytren's makes it difficult to extend the fingers. It can occur in thumbs as well as fingers, and in both hands at the same time. Risk factors. Dupuytren's can occur in people with either type 1 or type 2 diabetes, but some research indicates that it's more likely to happen at a younger age in those with type 1 diabetes, as well as women with diabetes. Besides diabetes, other risk factors for this condition include being of Northern European descent, family history of Dupuytren's, tobacco and alcohol use, use of medications to treat epileptic seizures. Symptoms. How do you know if you have Dupuytren's contracture? A typical sign is one or more fingers that are bent and will not extend or straighten out. If you are unable to flatten your hand, if you lay it on a table, you may have this condition. Daily tasks, such as carrying things or fitting your hand into narrow spaces, can be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to carry out. Treatment. Mild cases of Dupuytren's that don't progress quickly may not require treatment, but more severe cases can be treated by breaking apart the tough cords pulling on the fingers. This may be done with a procedure called needling, in which a needle is inserted through the skin to puncture and break the cord. This does not cure the condition, but if it recurs, needling can be repeated. Needling can't be used in certain places in the finger due to risk of nerve or tendon damage. Other types of treatment include injecting an enzyme in the cord to soften and weaken it, steroid injections, or surgery. Surgery is most often used for advanced cases of Dupuytren's contracture and involves making a cut in the hand to remove the thickened tissue. However, contractures can reoccur even with surgery. This is Barbara Foster.